read digital.
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening, Ryan.
Welcome to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Ryan, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Ryan.
Hey, Ryan.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Action Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. We also respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices a spiritual foundation of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 11. Please welcome our panel this evening, Rob and Calvin. So, step 11 states, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And I will read the first paragraph on page 85, and then the panel will share for a few minutes on each of the readings. So, page 85. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better than men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. So, who wants to go first?
Go ahead. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Calvin.
Calvin.
When I was reading this again in preparation for tonight, I got thinking about when I first got sober, how did I handle this? And it was with very specific instructions from my sponsor. And basically, I remember going through all of these questions on a daily basis. In the beginning, I had to actually have the book with me so I could remember what these questions were when I was considering my day. because I just couldn't remember stuff like this when I was first getting sober. I had a hard time with the big book at all. So a lot of my instructions were given verbally by Rob. And that was a life-saving deal for me. But what really stands out to me in my life is the last part here. We must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. Because that's what I'm really good at. I prefer to go there. That's kind of where I go instinctually. And if given the chance, I can stay in that place and not serve any good purpose. So what's that's turned into for me today, as I'm trying this every night, is just a brief reflection over my day. And I know where I've been at fault today because of the instructions that were given to me in the previous steps. So I don't have to worry about the remorse or morbid reflection. You know, I know what stands out, and I know that I have a chance tomorrow when I get up to follow directions and fix whatever I messed up. So it's become a much more streamlined process for me going through this. And it's become almost instinctual. I don't take the book to bed with me anymore, which I probably should. But, it's progress, not perfection. But anyway, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name's Rob. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Rob.
I'm grateful to be clean and sober today. I was going to let him carry it, and hopefully not have to say anything, but I was thinking about it the last couple of days, and I've been doing this for quite a while now, and the thing that strikes me is how this step has evolved for me in terms of practice over the time that I've been in these rooms. And when I first came to these rooms, and my sponsor walked me through these steps, that nightly list, I used to sit in bed and I'd write it out and I'd go through it and I would be really diligent, and I had notebook after notebook, reflecting on my day, and it was really great practice. I don't recommend sitting in bed next to your wife filling out the resentment part if she's looking. You have to explain yourself. Fortunately, she's my ex-wife now, but she's in the program, we're still good friends, which I give the 12 steps in this fellowship a lot of credit for that. But what I'm looking to do today is not just relying on this period of reflection before I go to bed, but being very intentional about my actions during the day. And this is practice, and I stress that because there's by no means anything perfect going on here. But right speech, right action, right work, right intention, how I live my life today through the day. If I can accomplish these things as I go through the day to some degree, when I go to bed at night, I can lay my head down and feel at peace with myself. And I don't have to jump into that morbid reflection and that worry, which I can do really well. Throughout the day, one of the great tools, and it's in this book that I use, is, thy will not mine be done. And it's a great reminder of the fact that I'm not in charge, and that, I have to let go of whatever's going on around me. But I do, I do make an effort before I go to bed to make sure that, I'm right with the world today. And, you know, if I need to fix something, if I need to amend something more appropriately, then, you know, I'm prepared to take care of that. Because this gift of sobriety and this way of life is, it's something that I'm incredibly grateful for. It's an amazing journey. And, you know, that relationship with a higher power has given me a lot of peace over the years. And saved my backside big time, man. You know? Does that work?
That works.
Thanks, Rob.
All right, we're going to move over to page 86. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunt or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it.
Well, I'll go first since he went first last time. Nothing if not fair. I literally have trained myself over the years. When my eyes pop open, the first thing that, you know, that I say to myself is, direct my thinking and divorce it from self-seeking, self-pitying, and dishonest motives. That has become the first thought as I wake up about 99% of the time. Now, the second thought might be more powerful than that, like, oh, crap, you know, I don't know, you know, it's Monday, and, you know, and I'm off and running, and my head goes nuts, and, you know, but I've put my foot down in that, you know, in that step, if you will, and reached out, and I have a routine, so it does allow me to, you know, try to, you know, adjust as I go along, because, you know, my brain will just run wild, and my thinking, and, you know, if I get too crazy in my, you know, in between my ears, you know, it's just, it, you know, it's not a good start to the day. And I live out in the county, the southern part of the county, and I have a lot of greenery, a lot of trees, and a lot of wildlife, and I have a porch that I sit and I look out, and, you know, and I listen to the birds, and I try to find some peace for a few minutes and just meditate. And I have a 2-year-old German Shepherd mix who has a high-pitched, shrill bark who will shake me out of that moment of peace and serenity every morning and test my serenity. And, you know, but this practice that I go through gives me that that foundation for the day. And when I get too out of sorts as the day progresses, I can return to that. And I think the word practice is just the key here. You know, it's the repetition of you know, prayer and meditation. It's the repetition of surrendering and letting go and being okay with the fact that as a human being, I am going to trip and stumble and, you know, that's just part of the package. So I get up and I do it again. And I just, you know, I keep moving. You know, but I do that with you guys. I do that with my sponsor, with him. You know, I'll call him. He'll call me. I'll call somebody in the program. You know, do something. Take care of business. And to me, it's all part of that practice. And it keeps me on this path. So I don't just go completely nuts. And I want to add this one last thing to this. probably the most important for me, thing for me that I have learned, especially of late, is going back to the thing I heard a long time ago, is halt, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. If I am any of those, you know, this practice becomes incredibly difficult for me. You know, the struggle. If I'm really tired, it's really, really a challenge for me to you know, stop, say a prayer, make a phone call, and it's a lot easier for me to run my mouth and, you know, give somebody else a resentment. So, you know, I have to keep be mindful of those things. They're real important for me.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you, Karen.
I've tried a lot of different things on awakening, but one thing that has become a regular practice for me before I get out of bed, I am praying and showing gratitude that I'm alive and I get up to live another sober day. I've tried reading daily reflections, 24-hour-a-day book, all kinds of things, you know, my sponsor recommended doing in the morning. And you know what? I didn't like it. I'd do it for a while. I was like, this just isn't working. I couldn't slow my mind down enough to even take in what I was reading because I'm thinking about work or thinking about this or, you know, whatever. I just wake up. Generally, I wake up irritated until I have coffee, but anyway. but what has happened for me in the past few years is that usually before I have my first cup of coffee, I'm texting and calling other guys in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so that's what's directing my thinking on awakening. I'm thinking about these other guys and, all right, who do I need to text? Who might need some help today? Who haven't I text? And, you know, maybe that's just enough for me to understand God's will for me is just by reaching out to other alcoholics. Because I'm not much good on reading these things and getting the results that it talks about. You know, Rob shared that, you know, he could sit by himself and get some quiet time, and I can do that occasionally, but every day on a daily basis, I need other alcoholics telling me what I need to be doing. And the new guys do that. They show me exactly what I need to be doing. And you know, it says we may face indecision. That's where they decide what I should be doing, because that's what you guys have taught me, that that's what I'm here to do, is help other alcoholics in order to stay sober. I think I'll pass with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Over on page 87, we usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no request for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why.
Okay. When I was reading this again, talking about prayer, there's some specific things here it suggests for praying. And I remember early in sobriety, just trying to pray because I wasn't really comfortable with praying, wasn't a big fan of it, wasn't real sure what I was doing, but it was recommended, so I did it. And I made sure that I followed these directions and remembered to only pray for things if somebody else were to be helped. And I put a lot of effort into prayer, and I've read several other books. I remember reading Sermon on the Mount. It was a recommendation, and it talked a lot about prayer and ways to pray and how to make things happen by praying rightly. So this was something I was giving a lot of thought to on how to do this. And I tried a lot of different ways, but that was a big thing for me, praying and praying consistently. I share this a lot, that I used to see bumper stickers and license plates that said, "Prayer changes things." And, you know, all those books that I was reading were telling me the same thing. Prayer changes things. If you pray rightly, you can change the outcome. I don't know if I ever got to that point, but I did realize that prayer changed me. And then I could really agree with those bumper stickers and that stuff. But my prayer really has changed, and I keep it to... I pray for the knowledge of God's will for me and the power to carry that out. I don't ask any more in a prayer at all, because if I can get that, that's good enough for me. I don't have to worry about the rest of it. So, thank you.
So, yeah, just a couple thoughts come to mind. First the saying, I wish for you the gift of desperation. I love that, because that sense of desperation when I got here was so profound that I was willing to listen to whatever you had to say. I didn't have an issue with the concept of a higher power, so I wasn't going to struggle with that. But what I did have an issue with was religious prayer and dogma and all of these things. And so I was very, very rebellious about the idea of anything that resembled religion. And what I needed was a really simple idea. And, this book really outlined a simple idea, which is, there's a God, I'm not it, And all I got to do is surrender my will today and just, say these words, fake it till you make it, all these things they told me. And, the best prayer that I had early on, and to this day, it's still an incredibly powerful prayer, but I only pull it out when I'm just hurting, and that is, God help me, because those words have a very, very, deep meaning for me. If I'm really in pain, if life is really, really, something that I'm really struggling with and I'm suffering over something that, has crossed my path, and, if I can just utter those words out loud, I hear them, and, it reminds me that, that there's something bigger than me out there that has some kind of, divine guidance. I don't know how else to put it, but today, the daily prayer is—it's pretty much what Calvin just said. I mean, it is a very, very, basic, prayer. It is, "Thy will, not mine, be done." I can't think of anything else that I need to ask of my higher power, to be honest with you, because if I'm going to be really honest with myself, everything that I need is in my life today. Everything that I need is given to me on a daily basis, and I truly want for nothing, so I have to have this faith that to ask for God's will for me today is enough. And I do believe that. Here's the thing. If there's a power greater than myself that was, so incredibly powerful in some, weird unseen way that could just like pull this incredibly insane desire to drink myself to death out of me, then, that power can do just about anything, like just give me what I need on a daily basis. So the task is to set my fear aside and just go ahead and, surrender my will today. And I go to, I like to go to what it says in, I don't know what it's called now, so y'all forgive me if you've been around a while, Dr. Addict Alcoholic, it's on 417, used to be 449, and, You know, he talks about what God's will is today. And God's will today is, you know, essentially doing what's in front of me to do and leaving the results up to God. In other words, you know, take care of business and get out of my own way. And I'll be taken care of. And those thoughts go with me on a regular basis. When I don't remember them, you know, you guys remind me through words and deeds. Thanks.
Thank you. Continuing on page 87, if circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see religious people are right. Make use of what they offer.
I think I already talked a lot about that with the books that I was asked to read or suggested to read. I remember early in sobriety, actually I think I relapsed after this event, but I called a guy in the fellowship every morning for a year and a half at 7:30 in the morning. We said the third step prayer together every morning. And so that sticks with me. I don't use it as frequently as I used to, but memorizing those prayers was definitely beneficial to me, even though when I was saying them at that time, it was just to appease my sponsor. He was my sponsor at the time. He's like, you need to call me every morning. I don't know why I was willing to do that. I wasn't willing to do anything else. But I did do that. But it taught me the third step prayer. And, you know, I survived a rough relapse and was able to come back in and put it to use in my life again. And I have been able to see where religious people are right, which is something that I wasn't willing to do before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't want to hear anything about religion. And my mind has been open to a lot of different religions because of Alcoholics Anonymous and the people that I've encountered here. Rob and I have discussed Buddhism at times. I went to a meeting, an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, that used to discuss Buddhism, and they would hand out pamphlets and stuff on Buddhism, which, you know, it was kind of weird, but anyway, it was useful information. And my mind was open to different things. And I see a lot of Alcoholics Anonymous in different religions. But it's a big thing for me to be able to even look at that kind of stuff today and make use of all kinds of things that the world has to offer, you know, not just religions. But it's because of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Okay.
Sure.
Was it okay. Kevin's meeting?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I never went to that. It's funny. I said it earlier, I had a huge resentment against religion. And so it was really difficult for me to accept that, you know, someone could be right based on, well, let me be real specific and be fair. I had a huge resentment against certain denominations of the Christian faith. Okay? So I have to be very clear on that. Because my experiences were such that there were some just awful people making awful choices, and I was mad. And now, that's not to say that there weren't good people doing good things as well. And I would later, you know, come to terms with that, but. You know, for me, I grew up in the Episcopal Church, and it was easy enough for me to kind of float, and it still is, in and out of the Episcopal Church at will and at ease. I have a certain, you know, perspective that I practice, and it was pointed out to me by an Episcopal priest that I could bring that with me, that it's a, you know, that it's more of a practice. And he's right. I studied Eastern philosophy in college in part, and so I adopted Zen Buddhism as a practice, as a personal practice. And what I've learned is I can carry that with me anywhere, but you can also carry yours with you anywhere, and we can all coexist easily without having to argue over who's right and who's wrong. And ultimately, and I go back to a guy I don't hear much about anymore, M. Scott Peck, and some of the things he worked on and wrote about once upon a time. I think he's passed away now. And he ended up being part of this fellowship later in life. But, you know, he talks about the tolerance of people of other faiths and recognizing that each one of us is on a particular path, and that your path is no better than my path, and that I don't need to be judging whether or not you're right or I'm wrong, and vice versa. That, you know, so at some point I had to come to the terms with that and be okay with the fact that we don't necessarily agree on everything in all of these rooms either, you know, and out in the world, you know, and we don't have to in order to have a personal relationship with a power greater than ourselves, whatever that may be. You know, and so I became comfortable with this position, and you know, I still struggle with, you know, issues out in the world, but ultimately they don't affect my sobriety, and they don't affect my relationship with a higher power. And I think the way this was worded, and I think the things that took place in the 30s when this book was being written, were really important, you know, to bring us to this point where we could walk into these rooms without feeling an overwhelming sense of one person's dogma over another. I've had the great fortune of going to meetings in Muslim countries, and it's really fascinating. And I'll share this one thing. You know, I went to what was supposed to be an English-speaking meeting in Istanbul, Turkey. There turned out only one person spoke English. He offered to translate. It was a big book study. And, you know, we said, no, that's all right, thank you, and we'll just sit. You know, it's good to be in a meeting. And they started reading from the book, and I leaned over, and I said, did they just start reading chapter 3? And he looked at me, and he's like, what the hell? And I said, well, the funny thing about it was the cadence in Turkish was pretty much, I'm a writer by trade, and so I listened for things like that, and the cadence and the way it was being read was very similar to the way we read it in English here, and I was able to zero in on that, and it was just a really neat sensation to know that, you know, somehow that same spirit, you know, regardless of where you are and what you speak and all that, is still alive. And, you know, it's a really neat thing to begin to put this together and terms of you know, the fellowship, and you know, without the specter of you know, opinions and dogma and religion. I don't know if that speaks directly to the language that we just read, but I think it really, you know, is where I am, and I think it's important for me to sort of remain there, sort of in the middle, and be comfortable, regardless of, you know, what you believe or I believe. We're all here to stay sober, and that's the most important thing. Thanks.
Okay. Continuing on page 87. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves that we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, thy will be done. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does. And then we're going to jump over to the bottom of page 88. It says, we alcoholics are undisciplined. So we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12.
Didn't I just run my mouth? Okay.
That's what you do.
That's what I do.
That's
your thing. That's my thing, running my mouth. Mm-hmm. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful. You know, I was talking about earlier about, you know, halt. And, you know, for me, the biggest piece of that is tired. When I'm tired, I can make really stupid decisions and run my mouth and get myself into trouble and find myself having to practice the 10th step and so forth. So I just did that last week, but I managed to get myself out of it. I don't know, we won't go into that. You know, it's taking that time to pause, to stop and breathe. And that's what, you know, that's important for me, to stop and breathe. I can't tell you how many times people would walk up to me and just, you know, breathe, man, breathe. You know, it's like, I'd be taking those short, you know, sort of staccato breaths, you know, just getting all worked up. And it's just like, breathe. And I've learned that, you know, when I get agitated, when I get frustrated, when I start getting full of myself and I want to lash out and tell you what I think is really wrong with you or what's really the right way to do this, I need to breathe and step back and just not do a thing. Sometimes the best thing I can do is nothing. And I've got an office in the corner of the third floor of this university where I work, and I love the fact that it's tucked away in the corner, because I can stay back there and I can, you know, just hide. I mean, I got plenty of work to do. I don't need to leave that office per se, but when I feel agitated, when I feel frustrated, and I look at that door, I just know I don't have to walk out there and engage. I got plenty to do right in front of me, and I can just sit here and, you know, say a prayer, you know, and focus on what's in front of me. And I think that's the most important, you know, lesson for me, is to remember to just stay mindful of where I am right then and take care of business. And it's a challenge. It is, because my mind just goes berserk sometimes, and I just want to let the world know what the hell's wrong with it. Restraint of tongue and pen. Well, you know, when, for somebody that, you know, writes for a living, or, you know, I spent 30 years working for newspapers and magazines, and I can tell you right now that restraint of pen can be a really difficult challenge sometimes when you have a space about this long to fill opinions with, get yourself into trouble. But you know, as I go through the day, you know, and then the last piece here. That last paragraph, faith without works is dead. You know, action and more action. So, you know, I was thinking about this driving over, and I think about this a lot. You know, it's sort of a catchphrase, and it sounds kind of trendy, but I think it's really powerful, and that is gratitude is an action word, you know. When I am grateful, when I remind myself what I have to be grateful for, and I express gratitude in my life, that action in and of itself changes the trajectory of my day and what I do and what I say, how I think, how I feel. And what I'm able to do is I'm able to, you know, share that experience with the people around me, if not, you know, through my talking. Then at least through my actions, and, you know, taking action on, you know, the simple things, and reaching out to people, or being willing to listen, or being willing to share my experience, strength and hope. You know, these things put me in the center of, you know, of a chaotic life, and they give me peace, and they give me a sense of purpose. And, you know, it's an honor for me truly, truly an honor for me to be of service wherever I can, in the smallest ways or the biggest ways. And I find that when I do that, I get, you know, a lot of joy and a lot of peace. You know, but I don't want to be in the thick of it all the time either. So I enjoy the solitude, you know, of my day as well. And I have a place where I can retreat to and be at peace, and, you know, not you know, have to worry about being agitated. And I can refuel, rest, and go back out and do it all over again. And, it's real important to me. You know. God's will, not mine, be done, man. You know, I end up living alone in a 2,100 square foot house in the country. Barely take care of the house, but I love every second of it out there. And I've found that over the past 4 years that, you know, I needed to work on, you know, meditation and solitude and prayer and be comfortable with quiet, and so that I can go out into the world and not find myself as agitated. And it's been a great experience, and it's informing my actions throughout the day more and more as I go along. It's by no means perfect, but it's getting better every day. Go.
Rob and I agree a lot on what he just shared. I was amazed to hear what he said, because it's exactly what I was thinking. When I read this first sentence, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful. Man, I'm going to be paused all day long because I'm agitated and doubtful all day long. But just like Rob said, is that what I find myself doing is nothing. You know, and Alcoholics Anonymous taught me that's okay. That, you know, you may be frustrated, you may be angry, you may want to lash out, but you can breathe and do nothing. You know, you don't have to fix it right now. And you don't have to tell people what you think about them and what they're doing. Because, man, I do all day long in my head. But Reiner used to tell me, he said, you know, what you think about other people is none of their business, and what they think about you is none of your business. So I try and just keep it to myself and focus on what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. Breathe and be okay with things the way they are right now. And a lot of times when I get really frustrated, I go back to what Rob told me early in sobriety, when I was doing a lot of whining and crying.
What, get over it?
No, you tell me that today. Oh. But you used to tell me. He's like, look, dude, do you have somewhere to live? Do you have clothes? Do you have food? I was like, yeah. He's like, well, then it's all going to be okay. You just stay sober. Figure out what meeting you're going to. Call other alcoholics, and it'll be okay. And some days, I go there and I'm like, wow, what a relief. You know, the rest of this stuff can just fall apart all around me and I'm okay because of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I can stay sober and I don't have to try and fix it. I don't have to try and make anything different from what it is. I can just pause and be okay. And I have become a lot more efficient these days. I don't burn up a whole lot of energy worrying about this kind of stuff. I got a good buddy who's in the room, and he burns up a lot of energy. And I'm hoping that one day he'll be a little more efficient. And I think he knows who I'm talking about. But anyway, I like the last part about the discipline, because my dad was big on that word discipline when I was growing up, and I fought it tooth and nail. I did whatever I could do to avoid the discipline, and I have become such a lover of discipline since I've been sober this time. I like routine. I like being on time. I like things in a certain way.
Call that OCD.
No, it's not. It's really more of a discipline. For me, it is, because it's so far removed from the way I used to be. And you know, I've... it's come from Alcoholics Anonymous. It started there with suiting up and showing up no matter if I wanted to or if I didn't, because I had to stay alive. And that just became my thing. I suited up and I showed up and I signed up and I did this, and I was there when I said I was going to be there. And if I was on time, that was late in my mind. I needed to be there. And that's what you guys in Alcoholics Anonymous taught me to do: be responsible, be disciplined, don't be so wishy-washy. And it's made a huge difference in my life, and it's made living with me a whole lot easier. You know, for my wife, my daughter, everybody else around me, they know what to expect of Calvin these days. They know what he's going to be doing, when he's going to be doing it, how he's going to be doing it, and people just flow right around. It all works together. And it really has made a difference in my life. And then action and more action, and I think we need to continue that sentence, and more action and more action and more action and more action, because it never ends for me. I put myself in situations in Alcoholics Anonymous that require a lot of action out of me, because I know if I don't have that action, I'm liable to not do any darn thing. You know, you guys taught me that too, to get involved and be a part of. And that moves us right into step 12, working with Rob.
Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
The student becomes the teacher.
I hope. Follow directions.
All right. That was our last reading. We've got a little bit of time left. Does anybody here want to talk about, got some experience with step 11 they want to share? Amy?
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Amy.
Hey.
And I am naturally impatient and intolerant, and I'm barely recovered from being a know-it-all. But I spent a great deal of my life being in exile from my own soul. I just been there the way that I lived and what it felt like to be me on the inside. And working these steps is something that's enabled it all to come back together. I don't have to check out from what I'm doing and from what I'm thinking. And step 10 and 11, it's hard to talk about step 11 without talking about step 10 for me, because this is kind of the emotional and spiritual hygiene. My way is not to pause. My way is to sit down, engage my brain, think really, really hard on how to fix it all and take care of the world at the same time and look as good as possible while I'm doing it. And that never ends well. That's a setup for a sad story for me, and usually the people around me. It's sometime in the past 6 months, I asked my boss for a raise. And so rather than pause, practice awareness until spirit emerges, or talk it over with a sponsor, I did what I always do. I started making lists and spreadsheets, and I did all this research on how I was going to mount, how I was going to present my case. Because that's another part of who I am as an alcoholic. I'm always making a case for me. And so I did all of that, and it was making me crazier and crazier and crazier. And of course, while I'm doing that, I have the illusion of control, that I can somehow negotiate my way to a certain outcome, which, I mean, that's my alcoholism. That's what my alcoholism looks like today. I'm not going to take a drink, but I'm always in danger of taking a good, long thing. That's where the problem is right now. And so instead of going to my boss immediately with all of my carefully curated information and research, I prayed and I talked to my sponsor. My sponsor said, why don't you write some inventory? And this is what, this is the agency that Step 10 gives me, is I can make use of Steps 4 through 9 as I'm going through my day or my week. And I took inventory, and I found out that what was in my head, the static that is always in my head, the, you know, I shouldn't have to ask for a raise. My boss should be giving me more anyway. I should be making more. Why should I be in this position? And why doesn't he pay everybody enough? And all that kind of stuff that has nothing to do, certainly nothing to do with God's will, and not a whole lot to do with my will. It's just static. It's just how I operate in the world through a filter of self. You know, those magic magnifying glasses where everything is about me. It used to be popular to say it's all about me. And then I hear that and I just cringe because that's the worst case scenario. But I took inventory and I took a look at the resentments against my boss. I took a look at the resentments against my chosen field. I took a look at all that, and then I looked at my fears. Can I take care of myself? Will God take care of me? And when that stuff was addressed, I could then let go of everything, go to my boss and say, I need to make more money. This is how much more money I need to make. Could you just think about this? I didn't give any of my stuff. I didn't make my case at all. And within 5 minutes, he gave me an average, you probably have heard this before, an average raise is 2.9% a year. I got a 17% raise. And it took him less than 5 minutes to decide to give me the money. So that's the difference between the world according to Amy, where I'm in charge and I am creating outcomes, in the world according to God, where all of my needs are already met because my Creator knows more about my needs than I do. And if I don't practice Step 10, the static is in my head. There's no way that I can seek knowledge of God's will for me. Because I often confuse the sound of my own voice with the sound of God's voice. I don't really know the difference all the time. But when I do this work, and when I practice gratitude with other people, I have a gratitude list with my sponsor, with the people that I sponsor. There are other people whose gratitude list I see. There's somebody who does one that's on Instagram. And maybe it's not supposed to be a gratitude list, but it feels like one. And when I'm sharing my life, when I'm living in relationship, I am out of the damnation and hell of a life based on self. Self-seeking motive, self-pity, which then I gotta amp up to dishonesty because I'm not getting what I want out of the world, and you all are such a disappointment for not giving it to me and appreciating me appropriately. And where is God? And that's what this all is all about. When I'm out from behind the bottle, this is about, am I gonna live a self-reliant life or am I gonna live a God-reliant life? And these are the steps I take to get there.
Thanks. Thanks, Amy.
I'm Kendra, I'm an alcoholic.
Kendra.
Step 11 has transformed my life. I'm not very good at religious prayers. I don't memorize things very well. But the one thing that I do remember is when I hit my knees in the morning that I ask God to direct my steps, direct my thoughts. God, what I'm going to say. God, what I'm going to hear. God, what I'm going to think. And it really kind of continues throughout the day. And it was funny, you were talking about the breathing thing. I've noticed, like, I start hyperventilating when I'm scared. And I've recognized that nowadays to take a deep breath and tune into what my higher power has for me, you know, what's going on inside of me. Because I'm having a physical reaction to something going on. Something outside of me is going on and it's causing a physical reaction to bring my attention to what do I need to do with God. You know, how do I need to turn this over? And I just recognized that today. And I really rely heavily nowadays on my intuition, although when I first got sober, I relied heavily on everybody else's intuition. Because I didn't know how to think, what to feel, any of that. You know, I couldn't tell you any of that. But it's something that I've gained through this program and developing a strong relationship with my higher power on a daily basis. And it really is kind of an ebb and flow. Sometimes I feel really close to my higher power, and sometimes I'm like, where are you, God? You know? And, you know, when I've just noticed whenever I seek my higher power, he's there. He, she, whatever you want to call it, is there. I just actually have to get on my own way, you know? Sometimes I just gotta sit and meditate for a while, get out in nature. That's kind of my go-to, is nature. If I can't find God in my altar or in my room on my knees, I go out in nature because God's pretty much all around me at that point. So, thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everyone. We are now going to support or pass the basket for the seventh tradition, which states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. And while that's going around, do we have any AA-related announcements?
My name is Seth, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Seth.
My home group, this home group, which is Simple Actions, will be having our next supper speaker on May 27th. Steve M. from Raleigh, North Carolina, will be here. Supper starts at 6, bring a dish if you wish. Supper starts at 7.
Thanks, Seth. Anybody else? Okay. All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. And do we have anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety so that we can welcome you? Welcome. Available over here on this lovely table. There are pamphlets and meeting lists. Please feel free to take it. Books are at cost. Please see a home group member if you would like one of those. And sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come up and talk to me. And before we close up, a reminder, smoker, please use the butt cam provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. And finally, why don't we thank the panel one more time for sharing. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, just up Colonial on 22nd Street. If you hit the railroad tracks, you've gone too far. And David is going to read the last two paragraphs on 164.
Everybody, I'm an alcoholic, David.
Hey, David.
Our book is meant to be suggested only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Learn the Lord's Prayer.
Trespass against us, and lead us not into temptation,